Okay, here we go.
Oh, oh my god, another 7. Are you serious?
Not my lucky day.
This guy.
Something troubling you? Surely there's been a mistake here.
What mistakes do your eyes see? Please tell us.
Well, the burglar appears to be placed on my highest yielding wheat field.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 208, recorded on November 12th, 2024. My name is Connor, and today with my co-host Ben, we talk about our favorite board games. All right, how's it going? It's been a minute since we chatted.
Yeah, it's been a little while. It seems like, I was thinking the other day, is Bryce now doing the On Location podcasts and I'm doing the Homebody podcasts?
I haven't decided yet. I mean, I feel like this is a multi-co-host podcast now. That's what season two is. I don't think we're either of us. Well, actually, that's a lie. Bryce is, I think, at the moment, what is it, November 12th? Actually, I don't know if he's left yet, but I know that there is a cascade, is that the right word, of conferences and events in the C++ world about to happen. There's Code Dive, there's Meeting C++. I think sandwiched inside of that is the Berlin. I think it's Berlin. I could be wrong. Maybe it's Poland. It's in one of the two Meeting C++ or Code Dive locations, which is Berlin and Wrocław, Poland. And then I think it's still happening, the Core CPP event in Israel is happening after that. And I think Bryce is attending all of that. I think. Okay. I chatted with him a few days ago and he said he had to do like, you know, 3 weeks work of worth. 3 weeks worth of work? Wow, that's a tongue twister. in like a couple days because he was heading for travel. And I think actually he was just in a conference in New York, like Pi Data NYC, where there were some NVIDIA folks. Anyways,
there's always something happening. It's always busy on the conference circuit. C++ alone, and then you take in, you know, all the array language conferences that you do, and it's all you guys are always traveling.
I think honestly, that's this, like, in the midst of whether C++ is crumbling as an empire or not. You know, it's hard to tell in the midst when Rome was at the peak of its, you know, height.
Sure.
Whether or not that's happening, I think the single best thing about C++ is the cornucopia of not just conferences, but also podcasts, content. Say what you will about competing efforts, but like Rust is probably the biggest of those. And I think there's only really one active Rust podcast called Rustation Station. And there's a couple other small ones that come and go that, like, I think the next currently active one is like at 10 or 15 episodes, and there's definitely a few Rust conferences, but definitely nowhere near the number of C++ ones. Anyways, and it's nice to, I don't know, as someone who consumes content, it's nice for there to be more content, because I would love to listen to more Rust podcasts that are like more language focused. Anyways,
so is this your new recording space? Connor's, where I normally talk to Connor from, he has changed. Now I see behind him a good number of books, which I will ask about in a sec, and a bunch of board games, and a bunch of medals and running numbers and a Sansevieria. Mother-in-law's tongue or snake plant, for those who aren't familiar.
Yeah, this is actually Professor Snake. It's from a friend of mine, Justin Kwong, shout out. He got married in September. I was actually emceeing his wedding. Congratulations to him and Jenny. He used to live in Toronto and left to Vancouver. And when he left, I acquired all of his plants, one of which is Professor Snake, who has never been on camera before. Maxwell, my fern plant, is too big to fit back here. So what has happened is I moved at the end of October. My fiance and I used to live at one place. Now we live what was her old place and is now our new place. And I'm not going to stretch this over like 10 episodes where I tell you a story each time about my couch and then my fridge. We moved. It was painful.
Oh, I have a couch guy down at IKEA, you know.
We had one couch at my old place, which was a hand-me-down from my sister when she also used to live in Toronto. And then she went to Calgary. Almost all my furniture is like acquired from people that left the city while I was moving, and they were like, right, "Hey, do you want half my stuff?" And I was like, "Sure, why not?" But cool. My fiance had a couch at her place, so we don't need two couches. So we sold our couch for $30 to. It's basically like the fee for someone just to come and get it from us. We don't, you know, we're not actually trying to make money from it.
Right, exactly. It's like take it away.
The point being is we're now in a smaller space, so all of my stuff is crammed into this little den. What used to be spread out across the apartment that we used to live in, and that's why you see, yes, all the board games and stuff. I'm not sure. Yeah, so we were chatting because someone once requested we should do a board game episode. I know you are also a board game fan.
I am.
So yeah, I don't know if you want to talk what's behind me, and then you can mention your favorites, and we can.
Sure. So we know that Connor likes Scrabble, and there are some word board games represented behind you there. So you've got one called Letter Tycoon. I'm not familiar with that, but you've got Dixit and Scrabble, indeed, and Word on the Street. Is that what that says? Yeah.
Oh yeah, Word on the Street. I went through a phase that's still a very fun game. It's a game where of the word games. Well, I mean, Scrabble is here. You can't see it.
Yes. Yeah, it is there.
This is the $20 version of Scrabble. If anyone knows, you used to be able to order custom Scrabble boards that, you know, you could choose the foldability, you know, if it's a tournament Scrabble board, turnstile, etc. You can't get them anymore. A lot of the companies folded during the pandemic, or they shut down just because they didn't have the bandwidth. It's like one person shops. If anybody knows a place that I can get and not for like 500 USD dollars, because that is crazy. That's the only ones that I can find. I'd be interested. Scrabble's definitely my favorite word game. Word on the Street is a game where you take not the full 26 letters, but I think it's like 22 of them, and you place them on a table in a line on a board, and then you'll get given a category like animal. And then you've got 30 seconds to think of the name of an animal and then spell it out. And every time you say a letter, you move that letter one lane towards you. And once you get it three lanes in your direction, you collect that letter, and it's the first person to get eight letters. Obviously, though, you go back and forth with the either opponent or the turn. So like if you say alligator, that would be a pretty good one because it's A-L-L-I-G-A-T-O-R. So you get two doubles. Yeah. A's and L's. So the longer the word, and also it gets really fun because towards the end of the game, once certain letters are collected, all the A's, R's, L's, S's, T's,
you can't use them once your opponent gets them. Is that okay?
You can use them,
but there's no benefit. I see. So it's a tug of war.
Exactly.
A 22-way tug of war with all these letters.
Yeah.
So do you go for, what's a good strategy in that game? One is trying to get double, trying to get long words in general. Do you try and snipe some of the lesser used letters, perhaps? That's a strategy.
The best strategy is to, I'm sure everyone has different strategies, although it's not a huge, it's not like a deep strategy game in general.
Sure.
The longest word as possible that you can correctly spell, because if you misspell it, you have to put back all the letters.
Right. Okay.
And then you want there to be a breadth of letters, but also if you can get like a double or a triple, like sometimes saying the word, daddy or something like that, or mommy. Those are bad examples because I don't actually think that would be the answer to any clue. But if you can come up with a word that has a triple, you can automatically lock that letter up. And especially if you have...
Oh, I see, because it's only three stops until you capture the letter.
Yeah. And then... usually you want to try and target letters that are either at the edge of your highway, like side of the board that you're one away from collecting, and you want to defensively try and take back if your opponent has like a T and an R coming up something with like a website like Twitter, then you can get it, you know, back into the middle. Very fun game. Not many people know about it.
It sounds fun, yeah. There are a few of those kind of tug of war. The tug of war style it reminds me of is a game called... that I haven't played, but it's called Watergate, and it's for two players. And it's supposed to be a really good two-player game. Strangest idea or kind of theme for a game, it's about the Watergate scandal. And one side is playing, you know, Nixon's administration, and the other side is playing basically the press. One side trying to, you know, get to informants first before they get sort of taken out of the game. And you're playing tug of war with a... you know, if you get it all the way to your side, then Nixon gets impeached and removed. And if Nixon gets it all the way to his side, he wins. It's a kind of tug of war game.
Interesting. I've never heard of that. And I'd be interested in playing because I did recently watch, what's the Watergate movie called? It's not called Watergate. It's
called All the President's Men?
All the President's Men, yes.
Robert Redford.
Yeah, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And there was obviously a couple other people in it. Where my fiance and I are watching, or trying to get our way slowly through the AFI, America's Institute 100. And it's a toss-up. Sometimes the movies really, really age well, and sometimes they're painful to watch.
Yeah.
But this one I thought was really, really good. And also, what's sad, and that's, you know, everyone loves their partners, but... Shima, my partner, is so much better at understanding like the context of a movie. The movie, not to ruin anything, but it stops before all the stuff that was in the headlines at the time took place.
It's just the lead up. Yeah.
It goes through that like in rapid fire at the end. And I was like, what? That's the most exciting part. But because I didn't live through it, like I'm not really familiar with what happened. But at the time, everybody would have known, like, they were telling the story that people hadn't heard, not the story that was in the news. She immediately picked up on that, and I was like, what? How could they do that? And she's like, well, you have to understand, like, we're watching this, you know, decades later.
40 years after the fact, yeah.
And I was like, well, now they got to make a follow-up so that the young kids that didn't live through it, because it's pretty insane what happened there. Anyways, back to board games. Watergate, I'll put it on my list.
It's supposed to be really good. I haven't played it, but I do watch... a YouTube channel called Actual LOL.
Actual LOL, like LOL?
Like Actual OL. Actual LOL.
Okay.
Yeah, hard to say. But yeah, it's a British guy. He reviews board games. And Watergate's one of the ones he recommends. Yeah, so I see several others there. Oh, Mastermind. Mastermind, of course, is a programmer type game, right?
Mastermind is the game that I borrowed the exact matches problem from in a Marshars talk, Point for Your Die, and then that I talked about it. I think it was in the composition intuition talk that I gave at CPP North a year ago.
I vaguely remember something. Yes. Yeah,
and it's actually hard to find that game. That version of Mastermind is a multi-person mastermind that has like a spinning ball where like up to four people can play and guess. I never played that version, but it's hard to actually find the old school, just rectangular with rounded edges, gray version of the game.
Right. Let's see. I see Hive, Wingspan, Patchwork 2, Codenames. Codenames is a good game, but really difficult, I found.
You have to have the right. You have to have people that are on the right wavelength. It can be.
Yeah, I think so.
It can be a lot of fun, but there can be some frustration, like where someone goes for. Or should we explain the game? Should you explain the game for those that might not have heard of Codenames?
Yeah. So in Code, it's a two-player game. At least I've played it two players. You're sitting across the table from each other, and between you is a matrix of what? 5x5 matrix of
cards with words on them.
With words on them. And you each have a key to this matrix, which denotes some of the cards as secret agents or bombs, or basically they are to be avoided.
Yeah. Like, so you get a 5x5 grid where you have two code sayers and then two people that are trying to guess. And the people that are saying the clues have a little 5x5 card that denotes, I think it's going to be like 7 red ones, 8 blue ones, and then 1 black one. And your goal is you want your red teammate somehow to guess the red ones, the blue for blue, but never guess black because that's the equivalent of sinking the 8 in a game of billiards.
On each turn, you are trying to give, I think, a single word clue.
One word, yes.
That somehow leads your opponents to guess one or more of the hopefully related words in the matrix. Obviously, the ones you want them to guess, the red ones, and not the ones you want them to avoid.
Oh, no. That is
my son just sent me a dad joke. Where do bad rainbows go?
I have no idea.
Prism.
Oh.
That's a dad joke.
We'll keep that in. We'll keep that in.
Yeah, so Codenames is... and what makes it difficult is you don't have an unlimited number of turns, right? The timer counts down every turn. You only have a limited number of turns to... uncover all the or identify all the good words.
I've never played that way.
Yes.
Wait, maybe I've been playing wrong for the entirety of my Codenames.
Well,
career.
there is a mechanic like that. I don't know if it's a pure time limit or if it's just that when the quote unquote wrong words are guessed, they count against you and they they decrease the time limit. There is some mechanic like that, the way I've played it.
I think we might be conflating, I could be wrong because I've actually never played this version, but there is the solo code names where you play with just a partner and it's you against like a number of turns. And then there's code names versus a team. So the one you're explaining, I'm guessing you've got N number of turns and every, you know, wrong guess decreases something. And if
yes, and it's a cooperative game for two players. Like I'm cooperating with the person across the table.
Okay, yeah, I've never played this version. And so the version I'm used to playing is you play against a team and you're trying to get your teammate to guess your color, which is either red or blue. And you're trying to definitely avoid the black, but also trying to avoid the blue cards, because if you accidentally guess your opponent's card, they still get that as one of their guesses. So now they have less thing to guess. Okay. And the tricky thing is when you say a clue, you give it a number. Like a classic one is there'll be like some geography or cities, like, you know, Canada, Paris, but then it'll also have something like pyramid. And so you'll want to say something like geography for two, but you want to make sure that they don't guess pyramid, because it could be the opponent's guess, or it could just be a neutral one. So you want to say, okay, if it's, what did I say, Paris and Canada, you want to say something that is leans more towards like jurisdictional borders, like jurisdictions maybe, versus geography that could versus get conflated.
Landmarks, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I'd forgotten you say the number of words that you're cluing.
Yeah.
In each round. And your opponents can guess up to that number, or they can guess as many as they like. They don't have to guess the number you said. They could sort of leave it in reserve for the next guess. And then, so they can get sort of more information by combining successive clues, potentially.
This is where, because whenever I've played board games in the past, like pre-pandemic, especially when I was younger, I used to play with actuaries and even people in tech. We all take board games very seriously. So there's a set of rules where you can say N as the maker of the clue. And then, like you said, you can guess zero if you want and just say pass.
Right.
And then in the future, if you ever go perfect, if you go 1 for 1 or 2 for 2, you get a bonus guess.
Right.
And so you can make your way through. And there's another way where if it's close to the end and it's like a last shot Hail Mary, you can say, I can't remember what the word is, infinity or like -1. And then they can have as many guesses as they want. Or you could just say like 7 so that like they get as many guesses.
Yeah, so they get as many as are left.
And it can become very strategic where you'll guess like 2 out of 3 because you're definitely sure. And it's narrowed down to 2, but like you don't want to guess the opponent. So you'll save it for a bonus. But I've played with people where they don't understand all those rules and they're like, what are you doing? You're cheating here, getting a bonus guess. Or, and it's like, no, that's the rule. Anyway, see, sometimes that's a simplify. But I've played where someone will say like something for 2 and it's very obvious what those 2 are in hindsight. But then like the person was, oh, I actually didn't read all the cards. I only read the first 2 columns. And then it's like, well, you wouldn't have made that clue if you had read the remaining, you know, 10 cards. Anyways, very fun game, if not leads to some contentious moments with family members and friends.
So I am a avid board game player.
Yeah, what are your favorites? I don't see any behind you, but I'm sure they're in a different room.
They are all in the cupboard on my right, which is
okay.
Full of them. I would have to say my favorite game, and this is just one that I was playing. So when I was working in the UK for Electronic Arts in Chertsey back in the day, we would play Settlers of Catan. It's just called Catan in America these days, but I know it as Settlers because it was called Die Siedler von Catan in Germany. We would play it every lunchtime, every day, you know, and we would take the lunchtime just to play. And it takes about an hour because Settlers or Catan has an expansion called Seafarers. The original game, I understand, as it was designed, was Seafarers. Catan, or Settlers of Catan, without the boats part, is the original game that's cut down to fill, to make it the marketable. This is a 4-player game that lasts about an hour, right? So anyway, that game is just great in terms of how it mixes strategy and luck. It's a really, really, I don't know really of many other games that do such a good job of mixing luck and strategy. And there are multiple paths to take, you know, depending on where you get your settlements and how often they produce. And, you know, you can go for things like largest army, longest road. You can go development cards, you can go settlements, you can go road building. And then the game pivots as you play because you have to start out building settlements and roads. But then in order to make it to 10 victory points, you more or less have to start upgrading to cities at some point. And that takes a different, you know, a different distribution of cards, a different strategy, because cities require, I think it's stone and wheat to build, whereas roads are brick and wood. Mm-hmm. So completely disjoint materials that you need to somehow get. And there's just such a lot for such a smallish game. I mean, it's a sort of a for me, it's a perfect size. There's so much in it. There's so much combinatorially in it. You know, it's just, you're putting down settlements, you're putting down roads, you've got a card, a hand of cards, and you're spending cards and you're getting cards from what produces every time the dice are rolled. It's a great game. I used to play it every day. I always have a soft spot for it.
I've only played Catan, I think, 3 or 4 times. I've loved it every time I played it. I'm not actually sure why I never got into it. I think it's probably because I found Carcassonne first, and both of those games, I'd say actually Carcassonne has...
Carcassonne's a worker placement game, is that right?
Yeah.
That's the one with the meeples?
Yes, exactly. It's my second favorite game by far because it's a game that takes like 1 minute or 2 minutes to explain, 2 minutes of playing it to get the gist of it, but it's right. Actually got... It's like a light strategy game that actually has a lot of depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the similar box of Catan. So I think I discovered Carcassonne first, fell in love with that. If not, I would have fallen in love with Catan. But Catan, yeah. I came across this Instagram reel, and I will try and find it and get the audio and cut it in.
Okay, here we go.
Oh my god, another 7. Are you serious?
Not my lucky day.
This guy.
Something troubling you. Surely there's been a mistake here.
What mistakes do your eyes see? Please tell us.
Where the burglar appears to be placed on my highest yielding wheat field.
I'm afraid no mistake has been made.
But are your people not enjoying bread made from my wheat?
And are your people not living in stone halls?
From the resources that I've given, you illustrate my point perfectly. We were engaged in trade. My people no longer have use for your bread. We take lamb from the north. But what about us? Your friends, no allies. What of that? People of the Orange Kingdom. Do not make alliance. We had an alliance!
Jack Alliance.
If you thought that was an alliance, then you truly are a fool.
I'd rather live 1,000 lives as a fool than breathe a single breath as a tyrant.
Yo, I just won.
What?
Yeah, I just got longest road.
Oh, yeah, true. Okay.
I wanted to see where this was going.
God, that's anticlimactic.
Winning that didn't even feel good.
I think I'm having a panic attack. I don't want to clean this up.
It was so fun. It's these two guys, or it's just actually one guy playing three characters, and they're playing a board game of Catan, and they're saying, at some point, he's like, I'm no longer going to trade my wheat with you. And then he goes into these accents of like, I can't believe we had an agreement. And he was like, blah, blah, blah. And they go back and forth for like 40 seconds if this is like, you know, a Shakespearean medieval whatever. And then the third guy who's just like watching it happen is like, I won't say it because I don't want to ruin it. But anyways, he just like interrupts and then the game's over. And it's you have to have probably played Catan at least once to understand the hilarity of it.
Yeah. One of the things that makes it good is on any turn, you have a number of choices of what to do. You know, you have plans to advance your own standing and you can try and screw up other players. You can be racing to build roads to cut people off. You can be, but you always have, a hand of cards, right? Mm-hmm. And you could buy a development card or build a road or exchange cards, maybe at a port if you have a port, or, you know, so there's a choice. There's always a choice over what to do. And that's what makes it. And it's a kind of a fast paced in terms of like the turns don't drag.
Mm-hmm. It's also a game of, which is why I like Carcassonne as well. It's a hitting game of statistics, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
Like well, math in plays a Settlers, role.
Exactly. In Settlers, the statistics are not hidden. They're actually exposed on the board. So you lay out the hex tiles for the island, right? The island is made of hex tiles. Mm-hmm. And every hex tile is one of five landscape types which produce the various resources. So you've got pasture producing sheep, wheat fields producing wheat, mountains producing stone, mines producing brick, and what's the other one? Forest producing wood, right? And then one tile is desert. Just the way that the tiles are mean that the island has one tile, which is desert. And that's where the robber lives to begin with. And then across those tiles, you lay counters, which indicate that each counter has a number on it, right? Corresponding to a roll of two dice.
Right.
So the idea is that when that number comes up, the tile with that number will produce its resource.
Right.
But also there's dots on the little number tiles. And the number of dots indicates the probability. So 8 and 6 obviously are the highest probability. So if you roll a 7, which of course is the ultimately highest probability with two dice, that doesn't produce anything. That's when the robber moves. And the person who rolled the 7 moves the robber to whichever tile they want and then steals a card from someone with a settlement on that tile. That's the whole thing about rolling a 7, right? Rolling a 7 is the most common roll, but it doesn't... If a 7 is rolled, everyone has to discard their hand cards down to a maximum of 7, right? So there's that element. Right. You could be building up a stockpile of cards, but if you don't spend them quickly enough, you run the risk that a 7 is rolled, and then you have to discard. I think you have to discard half of them, actually. It might not be down to 7, it might be half. I forget the rule.
This is very, honestly, I'm not super familiar with the game, but craps-esque, where...
Yes, yes. Well, and then all the way down to, like, so... Obviously, you lay out the island, you lay out the numbers on the tiles. And then the first thing you do is everyone places two starting settlements on the vertices between tiles. So each settlement borders effectively has three tiles around it, so three chances to produce resources. But of course, you want to put your settlements on the vertices that border high probability tiles.
Yes.
The first player to go gets an advantage because they get first pick.
And it's snakes, right? If I recall, like the picking of, or like the way that people place things, it's snakes. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And the nice thing about Catan too is the replayability of it. That's like you're explaining of the way that you set the board up. Every single time you get a brand new, where there is some games like Robot Ricochet. I love that game. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I know. I've got Robo Rally.
No, Robo Rally. I've heard of as well. But Robot Ricochet is a very quick game. When I was down in Silicon Valley, there was some guys at Amazon that had a board game group that would meet at least once every 2 weeks, sometimes once a week. And we would play two or three games in the evening, and we would always finish with Robot Ricochet. And the replayability of that game isn't great if you really study the boards, because it has four quadrants and each quadrant can be flipped. So you get a certain number of new things, but every quadrant is always going to be the same. So you can kind of get a sense. And the way it works is you basically have a grid with kind of angles that these little four robots visually can bounce off of, kind of. Not like...
Hence the ricochet.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, if it hits an angle, you know, it goes, or if it hits a wall, it'll bounce back.
Is it like one of those laser mazes?
Exactly, yeah.
The play field, okay.
Yeah, it's just, so you can think of it like, with lasers and windows is a great way to explain it. And you'll have this board with a ton of these, mirrors, effectively, mm-hmm. that these robots can bounce off of. And you'll flip a card that'll show, like, a red circle, which means you need to get the red robot to the red circle or something like that. Okay. And so then you just stare. You stare, like, the 6 of you or the 8 of you at this thing, like, just trying to do it visually with...
Trying to figure out where the ricochets land.
And then at some point, someone will say... 7 or 14. And that's the number of reflections that it takes that robot to get there. And then the timer gets flipped. And if anyone after that can come up with a lower number in the 30 seconds, then they'll say like 10. And the person with the lowest number then gets to show it. If it's correct, they get that card. And that's it. And then the robot's in a new place. The next thing gets flipped. Very simple game. Incredibly fun, because some people will be like 24. And you're like, how did you... You can't do 24, like, and then they will have done 24. Anyway, very fun game. Haven't played it in years since I was down in Silicon Valley. But the point being, Catan, replayability off the charts.
Yeah. Like I say, I used to play it every day for like over a year, over a working year. We played every lunchtime. So replayability very high.
Be sure to check the show notes either in your podcast app or at adspthepodcast.com for links to anything we mentioned in today's episode, as well as a link to a GitHub discussion where you can leave thoughts, comments, and questions. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
I am the anti-brace.